If you would please, join me in 2 Chronicles chapter number 13, where we read that in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abiya began to reign over Judah. So we're about 18 years after the breakup of the United Kingdom of Israel. Solomon had died. His son Rehoboam was just as tyrannical in his heart as his father. And this splits the kingdom into the northern kingdom of Israel, which is the most populous and has the larger territory, and the southern kingdom of Judah, which is where the legitimate Davidic throne is located and where the temple is also located. So Rehoboam has died, and his son Abiya has ascended to the throne. Now, it says here, verse 2, getting ahead of the story just slightly, he reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. So we know he's not going to last very long. Now, he couldn't have been much older than in his 30s, based on his dad's age. His dad was about 58 when he passed away. So 3 years is a very short period of time for a young man to reign. So he is not a good guy, and it's going to end up in judgment of God against him. Now, his mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. Now, there was war between Abiya and Jeroboam. So in the last 18 years, there has been this constant friction on the border between southern Judah and northern Israel. Southern Judah had been told by God not to try to force the northern tribes back into union with the Davidic kingdom. But there was still argumentation as to exactly where the border was. As best we can tell, it shifted slightly somewhere between Gibeah and somewhere south of Bethel. So in that region of Benjamin, just to the north of Jerusalem. And we're only talking about less than 10 miles north of the capital city of Jerusalem. Now, Bethel was the city in which Jeroboam had set up his southernmost golden calf. So he saw it as the last big place that people would go by on their way to Jerusalem. And so he wanted it to be the most convenient place for everybody in the southern half of his kingdom to go and worship. All right, so that border dispute is now going to break open into a fight. And it's brought on by Abiya, whom it appears in his heart he thinks he has the divine right of a king to have northern Israel back under the Davidic throne. So let's tune in to what he has to say as he starts to attack the northern kingdom. Verse 3, Abiya went out to battle, having an army of valiant men, 400,000 chosen men. Now, he probably doesn't have a large standing army. So this is a representation of all of his adult men of fighting age and ability. So that's a pretty good population of adult men, say, from about their late teens, maybe early 20s, all up into their 50s, and maybe for some of them up into their 60s. So 400,000 he can muster. Now, Jeroboam drew up in his line of battle against him with 800,000 chosen mighty warriors. Same sort of thing. Probably not a huge standing army, but this represents the militia that it can be called up to fight. And you can see that it's twice the amount that Judah can field. And that probably represents the population variation between the northern kingdom with its 10 tribes, and the southern kingdom, with Judah mostly, but also Simeon and Benjamin kind of attached to it. Verse number 4, then Abia stood up on Mount Zemaraim, that is in the hill country of Ephraim. Now, this place seems to be somewhere near Bethel, but probably north of it. And so that means that Abia and his forces have pushed quite a ways north of the original boundary line between the two kingdoms. And so he is now ready to call out to the opposing forces. Hear me, O Jeroboam and all Israel. So Jeroboam is the king of the northern kingdom, and Israel is what the northern kingdom is being called. Ought you not to know that he who is the God of Israel gave the kingship over Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt? So a covenant of salt in the context of that time was an enduring contract where salt was exchanged for whatever the contractual arrangements were. Salt was very important. In fact, in our modern English, salary has its ultimate beginning of a word from the word for salt, because it was used for payment. So anyway, the point he makes is, I'm a son of David, and the kingdom is supposed to belong to my family by God's command. Verse 6, yet Jeroboam the son of Nebat, a servant of Solomon, and that's a slam against him, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his Lord. More of the slam, that basically Jeroboam was nothing but a servant class. He was a guy that was in charge of construction gangs. That's all he was. And then he rebelled against Solomon. And certain worthless scoundrels gathered about him and defied Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young and irresolute and could not withstand them. Now that's a bit of a slam against his own dad. He says that the reason Jeroboam got away with this is because his own father, Rehoboam, wasn't strong enough to stop him. Now, that's not true. When we studied already what happened at that time, God sent a prophet to the people of Judah and told them, God doesn't want you to try to force the northern tribes back into union with you. This is of him. Leave it alone. And even though Rehoboam really wanted to field an army against northern Israel at that time, God wouldn't let it. And the people went along with God's prophet. That's how the split occurred. But here, we've got a little revisionism going on. And Abia says, the only reason it didn't happen is because my dad was not tough enough. Verse number 8. And now you think to withstand the kingdom of he who is in the hand of the sons of David, because you're a great multitude and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made you for gods. So he says, you guys think you're tough because there's a bunch of you, which was true. They have twice the population, apparently, and twice the army. And he mentions these golden calves. Now, it seems to me that by this time, Abijah's Judean army may have already overrun the city of Bethel. And so the Israelis of the northern kingdom may have evacuated that city already and may have, in fact, taken the golden calf out of the shrine of the city of Bethel, and they have it in their army encampment. And there might even be a hint here that they've brought the one down south from up at Dan in order to have twice the God power in their army. Because remember, back at this time, many of these idolaters, because that's effectively what these guys are, they believed that the power of a god radiated outward from the idol that was the center of his presence. And so the closer you were to the idol, the more power of that god there was. So they may have, in fact, brought the two golden calves together in order to have power against the invading army of Judeans. But anyway, he says, you think that you can withstand my army and the kingdom of God just because you've got a bunch of people and because you've got the golden calves? Verse number 9, have you not driven out the priests of He Who Is, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, and made priests for yourselves like the peoples of other lands? Now that again is going back to the beginning of the split between the two kingdoms. Pretty much all of the Levites, all of the priests that were living most of the year in the northern tribes, when they saw how things were going in Jeroboam's early kingdom, they abandoned their properties, their Levitical cities, and moved south of the boundary. And along with them went all the righteous people of the northern tribes. And they went south of the kingdom. And so they've been living down here now for almost two decades, sounds like. And Abijah brings that up. You guys chased out of your country those that spoke for the true and living God. Whoever comes for ordination with a young bull or seven rams becomes a priest of what are no gods. So he mocks them. That anybody that's got the price of a few sacrificial animals can become a priest in you guys' religion. And it's not really a religion because you guys have got idols. Verse number 10. But as for us, He Who is our God, and we've not forsaken Him. We have priests ministering to He Who Is, who are sons of Aaron, and Levites for their service. They offer to He Who Is every morning and every evening burnt offerings and incense of sweet spices, set out the showbread on the table of pure gold, and care for the golden lampstand that its lamps may burn every evening. For we keep the charge of He Who Is our God, but you have forsaken Him. So he focuses on the idea, you guys have got a false religion, a made-up religion, while we have the religion given to us through God's word. And he was correct. I mean, they do have the temple, and it was built according to God's direction, and the temple services are going according to God's direction, and it's all happening on a regular basis. What he's not bringing to the forefront is that underneath the surface, there's a lot of people whose hearts are not fully engaged for God. So while Israel has the bigger problem, let's never forget that Judah's got a problem too. And it will be clear from time to time that it is a serious problem. But back to Abijah's speech. Verse 12, behold, God is with us at our head, and our priests with their battle trumpets to sound the call to battle against you. O sons of Israel, do not fight against He Who Is the God of your fathers, for you cannot succeed. So he basically tells them, you might as well give it up now, because God's on our side, and you're going to get beat. So your really only good choice is to surrender and come back under the Davidic kingdom. Now, verse 13 says that Jeroboam had set an ambush around to come upon them from behind. So while he's out here talking, Jeroboam is sneaking forces behind him. And thus his troops were in front of Judah, and the ambush was behind them. And when Judah looked, behold, the battle was in front of and behind them. So suddenly, they become aware that they've been surrounded by a superior fighting force. Remember, it's 800 to 400. So when Judah looked, and behold, the battle was in front of and behind them, they cried to He Who Is, and the priests blew their trumpets. And then the men of Judah raised the battle shout. And when the men of Judah shouted, God defeated Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. So God does step in on the side of the Judean army and give them a victory. How much of a victory? Well, verse 17 says, Abijah and his people struck them with great force, so there fell slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. So since they started out with 800,000, that represents a 62.5% casualty rate. So well more than half, moving on toward 2/3 of their original fighting force is done. And remember, since this fighting force represents a militia, this is a lot of the workers in agriculture and in husbandry and in the different types of industry that they might have going in the northern kingdom. So this is a huge, huge blow to the economy and population of the northern tribes. Verse 18, thus the men of Israel were subdued at that time, and the men of Judah prevailed because they relied on He Who Is the God of their fathers. And Abijah pursued Jeroboam and took cities from him, Bethel with its villages, and Jeshanah with its villages, and Ephron with its villages. So effectively, what's happened here is the northern, the border between southern Judah and northern Israel is now shoved north of the city of Bethel. And all of the territory between the old border and the new border is now under the southern kingdom of Judah's control. Verse 20, Jeroboam did not recover his power in the days of Abijah. Remember, Abijah is only going to be on the throne for 3 years. But Jeroboam he's taken a huge hit to his army, a huge hit to his kingdom. And there's not any ability of his to recover any of that during the remaining time of Abijah's kingdom. And then, this gets ahead of the story a little bit, but we'll read it. And He Who Is struck him down and he died. So eventually, God takes Jeroboam down. But we'll get to that later. Verse 21, but Abijah grew mighty, and he took 14 wives and had 22 sons and 16 daughters. So he's following the same path as Solomon and Rehoboam, marrying multiple wives, having concubines, and looking at your power as coming out of those marriage agreements, those treaties, and your own military. Now, verse 22 reports the rest of the acts of Abijah. His ways and his sayings are written in the story of the prophet Iddo. And so that is apparently the contributor to 1 Kings. And speaking of 1 Kings, let's go back over to 1 Kings chapter 15, verse number 7, where it says, the rest of the acts of Abijam, that's the same name, just spelled slightly different, and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam. And Abijam slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his place. So Asa is the new king of southern Judah. This is now the third man since Solomon died. It was Rehoboam, Abijah, and now Asa. And meanwhile, we've only had one king in northern Israel, and that was Jeroboam. Let's read a little bit more about Asa before we say goodbye to Jeroboam with his death. So 1 Kings 15:9, in the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, so 20 years after the death of Solomon and the split of the two kingdoms, Asa began to reign over Judah, and he reigned 41 years in Jerusalem. So he's going to be in our story for quite a little while. His mother's name was Maakah, the daughter of Abishalom. And I think it might be his grandmother's name was Maakah, the daughter of Abishalom. Asa did what was right in the eyes of He Who Is, as David his father had done. And we will see about how he carries out a righteous kingdom later. But now we need to go back and see how Jeroboam passes from the scene. And this requires us to do a little jumping around, like I warned you we would have to do. 1 Kings chapter 14, verses 19 and 20 first. 1 Kings 14, 19 and 20. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, how he warred and how he reigned, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. And I think that's a reference to the fight that we talked about between of Abijah and Jeroboam, where the border shifted north. Verse number 20, and the time that Jeroboam was reigned was 22 years, and then he slept with his fathers, and Nadab, his son, reigned in his place. So that means only 22 years after the split of the kingdom, the first king of northern Israel has died, and his son now comes to power there. And so I believe that's 920 BC whenever that happened. And it just so happens that the fall of 920 BC appears to be the 71st year, the sabbatical, 71st sabbatical year of Israel. And so that would be a special year to everybody. They're supposed to take a year off from their regular work schedule. And it also means that people have a lot of time on their hands where they think about things. And unfortunately for Nadab, the things that some people are thinking about is, I don't think that I want Nadab on the throne. So go to 1 Kings 15, verse number 25 next. And it's got a little highlight at the beginning. Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. So we have the comparison between the two kingdoms, which helps us in our chronology. And he reigned over Israel 2 years. So he's only able to govern for the part of 2 calendar years. Verse 26, he did what was evil in the sight of He Who Is, and walked in the way of his father, and in his sin which he made Israel to sin. Now that's a reference to the golden calves. So when Nadab comes to power, he is not a revivalist. He does not recommend going back to the true and living God. Instead, he keeps worshiping the golden calves. And so, what happens next is this. Verse 27, Baasha, the son of Ahiyah of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. And Baasha struck him down at Gibeathon, which belongs to the Philistines, for Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibeathon. So what is happening is that when Nadab comes to power, he goes down on the border region the western portion of the border region between Judah on the south and his own kingdom of northern Israel on the north. And he thinks that maybe he can compromise the western flank of the Judean territory by taking over some of the Philistine territory. So he is besieging Gibeathon, and that's where this guy from Issachar decides he doesn't like this new guy, and he's going to take him out and become king in his place. So verse 28. So Baasha killed him in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. So now we have our first assassination in the northern kingdom of Israel. And this new dynasty starts by wiping out every part of the old dynasty, exactly as God predicted through the prophet. Verse 29, as soon as he became king, he killed all the house of Jeroboam. He left to the house of Jeroboam not one that breathed until he had destroyed it, according to the word of he who is, that he spoke by his prophet Ahijah the Shilonite. And it was for the sins of Jeroboam that he sinned, and that he made Israel to sin, and because of the anger which he provoked he who is the God of Israel. So in accordance with that prophecy, when Nadab was killed there at Gibeathon, his body was not recovered and buried. It was eaten either by dogs or by wild birds. And when Baasha goes around and starts killing all of the other people related to him, they don't bury the bodies. They just leave them for the scavenger birds and the scavenger animals. And then we read this, and this is where we finish up today. Verse 33, in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, Baasha, the son of Ahijah, began to reign over all Israel at Tirzah. He reigned 24 years.